This Week in Retronauts. Sorry, Sony, I never consented to all this rear touching. Hi everyone, welcome to Retronauts. I don't know that I have this episode scheduled. I should. It would be a good idea. This is Jeremy Parrish, being uncertain about the schedule as usual. And this week we are celebrating, slightly belatedly, a 10th anniversary, which means this topic is now retro. But it's been kind of sunsetted for quite a while, so... You know, this one doesn't seem, this isn't one of those topics where I'm like, oh, wow, that's retro. No, this is old now because it had such a relatively brief life compared to its predecessor. That is the PlayStation Vita. Vita means life, but it means very short life, like a tiny little life. So we're going to talk about that tiny life and why the PlayStation Vita probably deserved better. So with me here on this episode to discuss the PlayStation Vita and Sony's terrible failure to give us the legacy it deserved, we have a fellow Retronaut.
Oh, hello. I'm Stuart Jip. I do like the Vita, but I prefer Rai Vita, and I've associated both of those things in my head now. Whenever I think of one, I think of the other. But you know what? I can still go to the shop and I can buy a box of Rai Vita, and you can't do that with a Vita. So thank you.
All right. And also from the UK, we have maybe the preeminent expert on all things Vita. I don't know. Do you consider yourself the preeminent expert on all things Vita?
It's very nice to hear people say that. There's so many people in the Vita community that know so much, but I'll take the compliment. Hi, everyone. This is Sandy Pry, too old for gaming from YouTube. That's with a number 2 and number 4. And I've been making content about the Vita for about 9 years now, just a year under the Vita's life. And very happy to be here. Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah. Well, I definitely wanted you here because you just recently launched a Kickstarter, which I think will be complete by the time this episode airs. But that's okay because it's already funded, so you don't need our help. And with this final Kickstarter, you'll pretty much have documented the entirety of Vita's life in print, which is a pretty remarkable feat because despite having a relatively brief period of life supported internally by Sony with first-party software, like 3 years maybe, it actually, the Vita ended up with quite a lot of software, like 1,300 games total, I think, because even though Sony was kind of like, everyone else said, hey, neat little system, we like this. And so it was a kind of a thriving haven for indie games.
It was, definitely. And obviously in Japan, it did pretty well as well. But the last indie game only came out about 5-6 months ago. So it got 9.5 years worth of gaming support, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that last little trickle, that one game released in 2021, I made a note of what it was. Where is that?
Ultramission, I think you had on the...
Ultramission, yes.
It was July 20th. That was the last day of Vita, digital releases on the Vita. Seven games came out okay. That day.
Seven,
so Ultramission
okay.
was one, but definitely the best one was Russian Subway Dogs, which is a great game.
I was just going to say, isn't the Vita version of Mighty No. 9 not officially cancelled? I mean, surely that's coming.
I don't know how that would happen because Sony has cut off digital releases and there are no more cartridges left to print on.
But that would mean that they were dishonest in the Kickstarter about Mighty No. 9. And I didn't expect to get this news today.
that's a whole other podcast. The PlayStation Vita lasted a long time and is officially defunct. But You know, I kind of wanted to get one of my bosses on this episode, Douglas Bogart, the co-founder of Limited Run Games, because he was a huge Vita fan. And really, in its early days, the first couple of years of its life, while there were still cartridges available to publish on, Limited Run really kind of made Vita its bread and butter. Then Switch came along and everyone who was kind of into Vita said, oh, Switch. And also the rest of the world said, oh, Switch. And so it was a huge success, unlike Vita. But you know, I think if you look at the Limited Run library, the first couple of years of it, it's really remarkable how many Vita games the company released. And, you know, that's only a tiny slice of the games that were available because they really focused on indie releases. And there were so many indies. Really, I think they would have been happy to have brought everything from Vita into physical form, but there just wasn't the ability. From what I understand, and I don't know any inside stories here, but from what I've heard, Sony just said, yeah, we stopped making Vita cartridges. There are no more to pick up. And they kept making them in Japan, I believe, for a couple of years after in the US. So like PlayAsia, I think, still occasionally puts out games, physical games for Vita, or they did up until recently, because they had access to that pure supply of Japanese cartridges. Whereas over in the West, we were like, well, that's it. So yeah, that was kind of it. Like, it's one of those things you don't really think about, like allocation of resources and just the fact that there's still an audience for these games. Like, you know, I think if we published Vita games right now, we'd sell a few thousand copies of it if it were something decent, but it's just not possible because Sony's like, yeah, we turned off the tap and there's no more, there's nothing more. So, yeah, just kind of a strange little system in a lot of ways.
Yeah, its life was really interesting, the way Sony treated it. And, you know, it's one of the things that is always a little bit sad about it. When you think about other systems, there's normally a successor that comes out to them. You know, whenever Nintendo releases system, there'll be another system coming. But, you know, when it comes to the Vita and also the Dreamcast, these are two systems that are really beloved by people, but will never get their kind of successor. They'll never get the follow-up console that it deserved.
Yeah, Dreamcast is understandable because Sega was just like, we're done. That's it. Yeah. No more. We're not dealing with the console side of business anymore. Like, we'll make games, but we're not doing the hardware manufacturer. But in terms of Vita, I think the success of Switch demonstrates that, you know, kind of the direction Sony was going with Vita, if they had gone that next step, they could have had a huge hit.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And I think, Stuart, go ahead.
I was just going to say, similarly, it really feels like if they'd launched the Vita even 5 or 10 years later, it could have done really well with the sort of resurgence of like PlayStation Studios and stuff. They could have really like intertwined those, I hate saying this, intertwined those IPs and such, get some exclusives out, maybe a little bit less touching. And I really think they could have done well with it.
Yeah, I think if you look at the fortunes of the 3DS and the Vita, it kind of shows the difference between how companies look at portable gaming kind of as a second thought, unless they have to look at it as their main business, because Sony had the PS3, which was pretty successful, and then launched the PS4 shortly, like a year and a half, 2 years almost after the Vita. And that was an immediate huge success. And at that point, Sony was like, why do we have to make these kind of cut down games that don't have much storage capacity on the cartridges, that, you know, don't have much power, they have to be optimized for a mobile chipset, when we could just be making PS4 games that, you know, take full advantage of all the power available to us? Whereas Nintendo, they launched the 3DS and it also kind of struggled at the beginning. And they said, oh my God, we've got to make this thing work because we can't fall back on Wii U. That launch is not doing anything for us. So they really pulled out all the stops, and the 3DS became their main bread and butter for a while Wii U was kind of like this thing that they were like, please buy this. No. Okay. And now, you know, they have the Switch, which is a hybrid console and portable. But again, I really think Sony was heading in that direction. And I've heard rumors, I don't know if they're true, but I've heard rumors from people who have enough connections inside the business, not anyone I work with, but, you know, just people I know in the industry, who have said Sony was working on a device that was basically Switch. And, you know, when Vita went away, they were just like, Why should we divide up our, you know, our resources and our attention and have, you know, some of our business dedicated to this portable system that's not doing as well for us, where we know that the PS4 is just going to make money hand over fist? So they killed that product idea and it never saw the light of day. And Nintendo stepped in and was like, hey, why don't we do that? And they did. And now look at us. Everyone's happy because we have PS4, PS5 are very successful. Switch is very successful. I feel like there doesn't need to be console wars. We can all just be happy and play video games. Also, there's Xbox.
What's a little bit sad in that is, as probably someone who likes the Vita too much, maybe, but is that when you think about the PSVR, Sony has still supported that after years, and that sold way less than the Vita sold. But still, they've continued to support that, but the Vita they gave up on just so quickly.
Well, VR is, I consider that adjunct to the PS4, whereas the Vita is, you know, a separate device. It requires, you know, different programming, different SDKs, different skills. It has different ultimate capabilities, whereas PSVR was, you know, it was very much tied to the PS4 hardware. So I can kind of see that because it's more an accessory than a platform in itself, despite how they positioned it.
Yeah, true.
So, Sandeep, let me ask you, why did you become such a huge Vita fan? What is it about this system and its library or whatever that made you say, like, this is it, this is the thing I'm going to cover exhaustively for 9 years in its full completeness, unlike anyone else on the planet?
Well, I think actually it just started with the PSP. The PSP came around at a time in my life when I was working and I was traveling a lot. And so this became my main console, really. And so as soon as the Vita got announced, you know, I knew I had to have it. So I bought it day one, of course. And, you know, that first day I bought like 7 or 8 games for it, just the games that I just wanted and had to have. And I just really just kind of loved the system ever since. It's just been so awesome. And I think being a grown-up means I've got less time to sit in front of my TV and like play my consoles. So the Vita is sort of always been, you know, for the last 10 years, the device I've been using and, you know, my main source of gaming. And so the way I kind of got into it in terms of my channel, it was actually the PSTV. When that came out in Japan, I had one imported and I did a unboxing and review video of it as soon as I got it. And, you know, it was the first thing I did on my channel, just first little kind of dabbling my feet in YouTube. And, you know, when I looked at the video a few weeks later, it had like hardly any views. And then a few months later, I came back and looked at it and had like 30,000 views. And I thought, oh, maybe this could be a thing. And so I just started covering the Vita, and it's been, and, you know, my channel will never be in the millions of subscribers or anything, but it's just something that I really enjoy and, you know, found that little niche audience that kind of enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually, Stuart, why don't you tell us about your relationship with Vita? Why are you on this podcast, aside from the fact that I asked you and you were like, okay, sure.
I have a relationship with the Vita that I would describe as troubled, but I do like it. I mean, this is going to sound like a mad lie, but I think people have got to understand that I have weird bad taste. But I bought the Vita mostly because it had Super Frog HD on it. And this is genuinely true. I was like, I want to try out that game Tearaway because that's getting a lot of press for all of its touchy-feely, boy, whatever you do with that game. But then I saw Super Frog and I was like, well, yeah, I'd like to own that on a handheld. I'd like to be able to play Super Frog when I'm out and about. It's important to me. I have this. And you know what? That aspect of the Vita, its capacity to play Super Frog, has never disappointed me. It's right there. I can boot it up. I can play anytime I want. That's great. It ended up being for me a bit of a classic gaming machine because it plays a lot of PS1, as you mentioned, and PSP games. And it plays them, I would argue, better than a PSP does, obviously with the nicer screen and the analog stick. I'm not sure if you can map the right analog stick to PSP games. I didn't look into that.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. You can. Even yep. better.
Yes,
even better.
I recommend Peace Walker on a Vita.
Yes.
Best way to play it.
Yeah, even better then. And it's sort of, sustained itself through that with indie games like Lufthansa's and The Binding of Isaac Rebirth when that came out. And it's got a more recent lease of life. And I apologize in advance to the more sort of moral listeners, but I found out how to hack it. So now it's just my another emulator box for me. But it's an emulator box with an extremely nice screen. So yeah, I rate it for that, essentially. I used Remote Play a fair bit as well. Most people I've seen online said that wasn't very functional, but I never had any problems with it, so I don't know. It seemed pretty neat. It seemed to be lacking L2 and R2 buttons, though, and I'm sure, again, there's a way to remedy that, but I didn't figure out what it was.
I think you're supposed to map them to rear touch.
I see. Well, yeah, that's not happening. I remember playing Spyro on the Vita and being like, why is the camera constantly rotating? And then finally figuring it out. The other thing.
Oh, it's because I'm holding my system like a normal human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's causing things to activate. What's going on?
The other thing I want to mention, only because I don't know when else it's going to come up, is I really disliked the thing that stopped me from loving it, because if this wasn't a fact, this would be like a top five, top three system for me. The fact that when you delete a game, it deletes the save data as well, unless you back it up. If you have PS Plus, which at the time I didn't, that was probably the one most boneheaded thing that they did, because it means you can't rotate games out without effort unless you pay for it. I resent that to an extent. But yep. I think, again, if you put custom firmware on there, I think that also stops being a problem. So, yeah, that's nice.
Well, you know, it's not like memory cards are really expensive or something. You can just load up on
the
those
proprietary
things.
Memory cards. Yeah, that's like got to be one of the coffin nails, surely. I mean, you can buy an ST De Vita, I think it's called, that lets you use a normal SD card, which is what I've done. But when you're asking that much for kind of an unproven system, plus all of this extraneous stuff, plus physical cartridges that you can't get out if you chew your fingernails like I do, that's a nightmare.
You know, anyway, spring-loaded. You can press the cartridge and they'll pop out.
No, that's okay. Fair enough. Well, you know what? I never thought to try that, because it's the opposite of what you're supposed to do to remove.
Oh, right. Something. I'm trying to get it out. Why would I push? That makes sense. I hear you.
It's like a push-pull door. Why would you push it if it said pull? It's ridiculous.
Sandeep, you were going to say?
Oh, I think I was going to agree with you very, very wholeheartedly on the saves deletion. It's a really... I mean, there's probably some reason in terms of they didn't want the Vita to be hacked or didn't want save files to be hacked, but yeah, it was a real pain. Yeah, you're right. Since hacking it makes it much easier, which I do advocate hacking it. I really do. There's so much functionality that comes with a hacked Vita, and you know, forget piracy, but just the Vita functionally can do what a Switch can do. When it's hacked, you can put a cable in it and play a Vita on a monitor. It's actually really impressive what you can do with the Vita, and you know, given its 10-year-old tech, and Sony just didn't really take advantage of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have access at work, or thanks to work, to a PS Vita, I guess, dev test kit.
Yeah,
which has the mini HDMI out, and that's great. I love having that option available. This is the one portable system I've ever owned that I did not upgrade with its mid-lifetime upgrade, because normally, you know, you get a new system and there's like a new handheld comes out and then they release a variant of it and you're like, oh, well, this offers something much better, so I can retire my old one and replace it with the new one. Like PSP, you know, the 2000, the 3000 had great screens. They had video out. The PSP or the PS Vita, they were replaced with a system that got rid of the amazing screen. Yes, it was like a little slimmer and a little lighter, but that screen was a huge selling point. It looked so good, still looks so good. Like it's, you know, on par with an Apple device because it's OLED and it just has like such great vibrance, such great contrast. You like moving to an LCD. I remember I was like really excited. Hey, wow, cool. I'm going to move to the new Vita. And then I saw a demo unit in Japan and I was like, whoa, I need to cancel my pre-order. This is not going to happen. I'm going to keep the old one.
I think the only advantage of the Slim was the universal charging port. So it had the same charger as my Android phone. So that was one advantage. But I think that was a real missed opportunity. That's the Slim. They put 1 gig of storage on it, and they knew the memory cards were a problem. That should have been the time. Just put 16 gigs on it or something, and then all those complaints go away, and people may actually buy it. Yeah, lots of mistakes they made, I think, over the life of this device.
Is there a single big Sony Vita game that is less than a gig in size? I don't think there is. I mean, Killzone isn't. Yeah. Uncharted isn't.
Maybe Freedom Wars?
That's both the Vita games I can think of.
I think Tearaway wasn't too big, actually.
No, you're right. I think that may have been the one, yeah. They should have packed it in.
Yeah, but Sony loves their proprietary formats. They've always loved proprietary formats. You know, before UMD, they had Minidisc, they had Betamax, they had, you know, just they've had Memory Stick, all these things that are like, hey, it's the same thing that other people have, but you have to buy it from us. And that works when people have bought into your ecosystem, as Apple has proven, and even Nintendo to a point. But, you know, this wasn't an ecosystem that people bought into. And as a result, all the proprietary stuff you had to invest in was just a turnoff. And it's a big shame. You know, the Vita or the PSP used memory sticks, which were still proprietary, but at least they weren't crazy expensive. They were pricier than an SD card, for sure. But like the price difference was maybe like 50% more as opposed to three times more. And yeah, I really feel like, you know, I still see people complain about Vita memory cards and like, I need to buy a 64, you know, gig memory card, but, you know, I can't put another mortgage on my house. I just can't do it.
Sure. I mean, surely if you haven't got custom firmware, they must be even more expensive than ever now.
You just can't find them.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, yeah. Even secondhand, they must be charging through the roof for them, aren't they?
So anyway, we've kind of talked around PlayStation Vita without really talking about it. But it is worth kind of like building a case for how the system came about and why it happened and why there were some good things about it, in addition to some of the troubles that it had. Because, you know, ultimately you do have, at the time, by far, like the most powerful handheld system on the market, at least as far as dedicated game systems go. And, you know, really incorporated a lot of features that were sort of up and coming in mobile gaming, and in a lot of respects seemed really competitive, but just like all those components didn't quite gel. So, you know, obviously the Vita came about as a result of the success of the PSP. You know, Sony took a long time to get into the portable game, nearly a decade after the launch of, actually almost exactly a decade after the launch of PlayStation. The PSP came out in Japan at the end of 2004, then in the US early 2005. And, you know, it did okay for itself here in the US, did okay, I think, for itself in Europe, but was really big in Japan. Like, you know, and it just kind of snowballed, I think, into a very nicely selling system. Like it was, I think ultimately ended up selling 80 million units worldwide. And a big part of that was the lift from Monster Hunter and the fact that, you know, people would get together and just hang out with their friends and play Monster Hunter together in groups of three or four. You know, I can remember going to bars and cafes and stuff during the kind of peak Monster Hunter years while I was going, you know, attending TGS. Just everywhere you went, someone, you know, in Japan was playing a PSP. It was just, they were inescapable. So obviously, you know, Sony wanted to jump on that.
Yeah, I loved the PSP. I thought it was just amazing. So I don't know if you guys remember, before Peace Walker, that there was Metal Gear Portable Ops.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was a proper Metal Gear game on a handheld. And I remember just like the first time I imported it from the US, because we got it about 6 months later. And I was just blown away by it, how capable that little system was. And you had a real God of War game in 3D. These kind of fun, quirky games like Patapon. It was just awesome, that device.
I cherish the PSP. I even bought a new one recently because my old one was slightly wrecked. I think I've been through about five because I just love it so much. I can't stop hammering them. Again, I'm going to say it, probably the easiest thing to hack imaginable, which is nice. But even before that, I was buying so many games. This isn't a PSP podcast, so I'm not going to just sit here and list them, but that's one of the major boons for the Vita, I find, is the capacity to play that library in higher quality with better controls. That's probably the main thing I use the Vita for now. But so many, like, I'm not really a JRPG guy, but so many JRPGs, so many like visual novels, so many PlayStation 1 classics. It's a great, fantastic system, full of like invention, the kind of sort of delirious kind of invention that Sony just doesn't seem to bother doing anymore. Like you mentioned Patapon, you know, that sort of thing. Stuff like Hammer and Hero, God, I can't even begin. I remember playing Chains of Olympus and thinking, this is amazing. And then playing Ghosts of Sparta, what, 5 years later? And being like, I can't believe this is the same system as Chains of Olympus. That's how much more impressive it was. It was a fantastic piece of hardware and I love it. And I still want to play. I want to play it right now, to be honest.
It was pretty, PSP. Sorry, Jeremy, please.
A PSP was a great example of, you know, a system developing enough traction and enough of an install base that the top development teams could, you know, afford to invest in it and to really wring every last bit of juice out of that system the way they had with PlayStation. And, you know, it makes me wonder what Vita could have done had it's seen more success and Sony's first party teams and like Square Enix had said, wow, this is a great system. We've got to really just like see what we can do with this. Because, you know, by the end, Square was doing some really amazing stuff on PSP too. Like, admittedly, you may not like the third birthday. It has a lot of problems, but it looks great. Like before that, Crisis Core looked amazing. Yeah. It was really kind of like having a portable PS2. And then, you know, Vita was kind of meant to be like having a portable PS3. And, you know, I think on that front it succeeded, but there were a lot of issues that it faced. For one thing, there was piracy. You've touched on this, Stuart, but mm-hmm. the PSP was hacked within months of its debut. Like I remember, I think it was E3 2005, maybe 2006, but I think it was 2005. Chris Kohler went to an interview with Shigeru Miyamoto. And during this meeting, he whips out his PSP and is like, look, I'm playing emulated Super Mario Brothers on my PSP. And Miyamoto was like, wow, that's very interesting. I think they were kind of taken aback by that. But yeah, like, you know, almost immediately after the PSP's launch, you could, you know, use exploits to play NES emulators. And, you know, some of the emulators like Super NES never really worked that well, but I played a lot of NES games on my PSP. Like for a while, it was kind of the main way I played classic games was just like, hey, I want to play some NES stuff, so I'm going to boot up my PSP. And obviously, Sony didn't like that. But, you know, sometime in the summer of 2005, the PlayStation Portable SDK was hacked. So at that point, like that was basically full access. Like that leaking and being cracked gave, you know, the custom firmware developers and homebrew developers, but also pirates, just total access to the system. And that definitely had an impact on software sales. And you saw that on DS as well, where R4 cards came out and all of a sudden software sales plummeted. But at the same time, you also had during this kind of previous generation of handhelds, the rise of mobile gaming with the iPhone launching in 2007, which admittedly didn't have games at first, but in 2008, the App Store launched and all of a sudden you didn't have to build everything in HTML5 or whatever. You could actually create standalone apps. And immediately, you know, you started seeing some pretty big titles. Like one of the first things I played as an iPhone game was Katamari Damacy. And the frame rate was pretty bad on the original iPhone. But once the 3G came out, it ran pretty smoothly and it had better resolution and crisper graphics than the PSP. So all of a sudden here was this thing you were just going to carry in your pocket and use to like text people and call people. And also it could play games that looked way better than the PSP. So that was a huge threat both to Nintendo and to Sony. So those were kind of like the big issues sort of bubbling beneath the surface when they were developing the Vita.
Yeah, it definitely made things difficult for the Vita to do well. And, you know, I think Sony did try and have these lower price games like Escape Plan and Super Stardust so that people did have things that were cheaper that they could purchase. But you're right. I think that definitely had an impact in terms of people wanting a dedicated device because they already had something for gaming. And then knowing that games cost so much, I think it did definitely put people off.
Yeah, the earliest iPhone games, I think, cost, you know, in the range of like $7.99 to $14.99 in terms of dollars, at least. Whereas, you know, PSP games were costing $30 to $40 and Vita games were, you know, a step above that, $40 to $50. So that was rough. And then in 2012, Candy Crush Saga came along. And that introduced really, maybe not introduced, but really kind of cemented the freemium format where people would download a game for free and then pay like 20 times as much as they would have for a standalone app if they'd paid up front through microtransactions because, you know, cheap level design that is deliberately designed to say, oh, if you just give us $6, we'll give you some more shots. Don't you want to do it? You know, just one more try. Like really, really hitting those gambling addiction, drug addiction endorphins with their freemium model. And, you know, people don't factor like the actual cost of Candy Crush Saga because, you know, the freemium games, it's a little dribble, a little trickle here and there, a dollar at a time, $2, maybe $4. But, you know, they see a free game and then they see on Vita a $50 game. Well, which seems more appealing, even if you actually end up spending $200 or more if you're a whale on your free mobile game. Like, you know, the first hit is always free and that's hard to argue with.
On the Vita, that seemed to be replaced with, like, I don't know, pay $40 for, like, Senran Kagura and then drop $2 for all of the 500 different swimsuits you can buy for all the characters. There seemed to be quite a lot of that on the Vita, unless I'm misrepresenting it quite cruelly.
Yes, there was a lot of paid DLC on Vita, but you also had to pay upfront for the game. Yeah. So that's a tough case to make. You know, you can get your softcore porn on mobile platforms pretty easily.
You can.
Yes, good news, Stuart. You're in luck.
All right, see you guys later.
That killed the conversation.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just saying that the Vita was a hard sell, I think. And 3DS was too. And Nintendo really had to push to make 3DS appealing because they needed 3DS to be appealing, especially once Wii U kind of went. Whereas Sony, they didn't have to push to make Vita a success because they just had PlayStation 4. So, you know, by mid-2015, I want to say Sony developed and published its last game for the system. I think the final game they developed internally of note was Freedom Wars, which came out, I want to say, at the end of 2014. So that was basically 3 years of internal development for the system, which is not very long. Like, that's on par with Dreamcast and Wii U, if that gives you any idea of kind of where this sits in the echelons of video game history. But that wasn't the end of the story because lots of indie games, like Sony said, we're not going to make games anymore, but hey, why don't you guys, you know, bring your little indie games over, your cute little projects. We'll publish those for you.
Yeah, it was sort of the Switch had its sort of indie boom, but the Vita was my machine for playing all these indie games portable for the first time, stuff like Rogue Legacy and Off Trousers and La Milana, which I actually managed to beat on the Vita. I couldn't beat it in any other form. Oh God, I used a guide. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's no, I can't figure that stupid game out, but it's awesome.
Yeah, it really was just such a great device for indie games. So many, all those, you know, I remember I bought an Xbox 360 for games like Fez and Bastion, which weren't on PlayStation at the time. And then they all came to PSP and it was like, oh, actually, I don't need my 360 really anymore because all these games that I loved are here on my Vita. And so, yeah, it was just brilliant. So, you know, and I think there are a lot of people who still kind of look down a little bit on indie games, but I think the Vita has been awesome for it. And just, you know, it's been so many different experiences that you just couldn't get on previous devices were all there on the Vita. I loved it personally.
I'd say it's worth noting as well that until the OLED Switch came out, it was still the best way to play some of those games. Like stuff you mentioned, like Fez, that they just look beautiful on the Vita compared to, well, almost any other format. And, you know, being condensed down onto a smaller screen also helps with the fidelity and all that stuff. It can't be overstated. There were so many games, like way more than people will probably think, that got released on the Vita as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you add up the retail releases, all the digital indies, You know, small party physical releases from companies like Limited Run, Play Asia, PS1 classics, PSP games that were compatible. Mm. It's a prodigious library. It's very respectable. Like it's huge. I mean, PSP had something like 1800 games total and Vita had 1300. So, you know, despite the massive gulf in sales, like 16 million versus 80 million, Vita wasn't that far behind in terms of its library. And the thing about Vita is that, you know, the attach rate was really high. Like if you bought a Vita and you were into it, then you tended to buy a lot of games for it. Yeah. Even though you didn't have any storage space for it, you still bought them and you wept a little bit and you cursed Sony, but you just couldn't help it because you loved playing those games and you loved that little system with its little screen. It was just so good. You couldn't help yourself. Damn it, Sony. Damn it.
I'm definitely guilty of that. I don't want to count how many games I've got for the Vita. It's a scary number, physically and digitally.
I'm kind of the same way with Switch. Like I don't even have time to play video games anymore. And yet, like once a month, I'll go through the eShop and I'm like, oh, I need that. Yeah, okay. Here's the Arcade Archive stuff. It's kind of bad. It's not healthy, but well, you know, it's.
It helped.
I count it as a tax write off.
It helped in the Vita that the games, in my experience digitally, they were quite reasonably priced, especially PSP and PS1 games. I think a two-disc sort of game or something big like Metal Gear Solid would top out at, what, like $6.99? Yeah. Exactly. I can go on there and I can buy any manner of obscure old crappy platformers that I love, like Pandemonium, and I'll only pay $3.99 for it. And there's something to be said for that. That's not a lot of money. You know? There's a lot of good. You could get a Vita and you could get like $50 and you could take away probably like about 10 really, really great games.
Yeah, there are rumors circulating now that Sony is going to make another push for emulation and backward compatibility on PS5, which I think, you know, I'm hoping it would be really nice if they would honor the existing purchases you've made. Mm. They're probably not going to do that. But at the very least, hopefully they will carry forward a pricing scheme similar to Vita's, like the PSP, PS Vita, PS1 shop. Instead of saying, well, you know, retro games, those have really gone up in price, so we should also make our digital copies twice as expensive because scarcity, you know, we heard about this NFT thing. Digital data can't be replicated infinitely. So there's real scarcity for our PS1 games. We have to charge more. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that.
Don't give them ideas.
Oops. Hey, Sony, if you were listening to this podcast, pay no attention. You've forgotten everything you just heard.
I mean, they did threaten to shut down the store not long ago, as we've talked about on the Delisted Games episode, when I think we thought they were going to shut down the store. They just...
Yes, and we scared them back into not doing it.
We did that ourselves individually.
They were trying to embarrass us and make us look stupid, but ultimately but we came out ahead.
All it took was a series of actionable threats from me, and they did as I said. But... if you have a Japanese PS Vita and you go on the Japanese PS Vita store, you can buy all the great PS1 games ever made, pretty much. So, I recommend doing that.
I don't know that threatening to give Jim Ryan a swirly was really an actionable threat. Like, when have you ever met Jim Ryan?
When I gave him a swirly.
Fair enough. Talk about Sony's NGP. That's not Neo Geo Pocket, that's Next Generation Portable. That was a very confusing time to be working in the video games press because people kept talking about the NGP and I kept thinking, oh yeah, I love SNK's little handheld. Maybe it's going to come back. No, it was the Vita. So they eventually named it Vita. And it was a pretty damn impressive machine. Like, it really looked, you know, physically like an evolution of the PSP. It wasn't as narrow and slim as the PSP, but it just, I don't know, it felt more compact and more powerful somehow. Like, even without looking at the graphics it could push, you just looked at it and you were like, this can do more. Maybe it was the second analog stick. Maybe it was the existence of analog sticks as opposed to a nub.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the Vita, you pick it up, you turn it on now, today, and frankly, it looks like it could have just come out. It looks really fresh, really good, I think. Super ahead of its time. It's an
except
impressive.
Except the menu interface, those big bubbles, yeah. those are like super tacky. Those are
not a fan of bubbles.
Bubbles can be nice, but those bubbles are super dated.
Yeah, well, you know what you can do that you can't do on a Switch? You can put those bubbles in labeled folders.
Very true.
let me run through my Switch game list with you sometime. Just an infinite cascade of clicking
as scrolls
down. And eventually the system stops being able to serve up thumbnails as quickly as I'm scrolling. It's just like, here's some question marks with names under them. All right, buddy, you done? Yeah. Okay, here's your images.
This is a first world problem, but since I started doing reviews and getting sent review copies, that's kind of me. I'm just like, where is this? Is this a game on my American account or my European account, my Japanese account? And how far down is it? And et cetera, et cetera. Big first world problem there.
Yeah, I bought one game off the Japanese eShop and I cannot figure out how to stop. I cannot figure out how to stop getting promotional emails from Nintendo of Japan. I'm like, I don't need this. I don't need to know about what's coming out on Switch in Japan because it's going to come to the US. I don't need to know. Just stop sending me emails. But I don't know the Japanese for unsubscribe. It's terrible. Subscribe shinai. I don't know.
That's definitely it.
So anyway, key features of the PS Vita. It's a chunkier boy. That's a good thing. Feels good in the hands. Doesn't feel quite as fragile as the PSP. And I think that's partially because it's a chunky boy and also because it didn't have the physical disk drive. They replaced the UMD drive. So there wasn't as much like torsion on the Vita. You couldn't like twist it and make the disk shoot across the room, which was, you know, kind of a cool feature on the PSP, but not good for the long-term health of the system.
Yeah, it definitely felt more premium than the PSP. And, you know, I remember being on the train and it happened a couple of times where people said, oh, what is that? When I was playing my Vita. So I think it definitely caught people's eyes, a kind of good looking device. Mm-hmm. And the lack of UMDs, I think, although I know some people would have liked to be able to carry their UMD library forward to the Vita, it didn't make sense as a format to continue. It was, like you said, clunky, and that whirring noise whenever you put it into the PSP. I definitely prefer the carts overall on the Vita.
Yeah, I don't want a handheld system that has an optical drive that sucks battery power. Like, it's just not efficient. But, you know, I do agree that it would have been nice to have carried over the UMD library in some capacity, but instead the Vita only offered backward compatibility with digital releases for PSP, which was kind of a shame because there were a lot of early releases before they moved to all digital with the PSP Go's launch that just never made it onto the Vita or the PSP store, the Sony network store, whatever you call it. Mostly, you know, notably releases from Square Enix. Stuff like Crisis Core, Kingdom Hearts, Valkyrie Profile, like those were all trapped in UMD hell. And we're never going to see them again because they don't want to pay for GACT's likeness, which is understandable. But, you know, it does seem unfortunate that there is this kind of notable chunk of PSP history that is not accessible on any platform today and didn't carry forward to Vita. But, you know, the games that you could play on Vita from PSP played really well. We've mentioned before that, you know, you could remap the controls. And, you know, the PSP famously had four face buttons and an analog nub and I guess you can call it a D-pad if that's what we call Sony's control cross. And moving to D-pad plus four face buttons plus two analog sticks really, I think, opened up the door for more proper 3D action games and 3D experiences. Mm-hmm. Ironically, not to Monster Hunter, because Sony or Capcom was made some sort of deal with Nintendo and, you know, published exclusively on 3DS, which was, you know, probably a nail in the coffin for Vita. But if Monster Hunter had been there, other than the PSP games, you could have played it without the claw. That would have been so cool.
I do wonder how fortunes would have been different if they just had Monster Hunter, if they just had that momentum from the PSP. I don't know.
I think it would have at least doubled the install base of the system.
Wow.
Just based on the popularity of that series in Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in the West, they probably needed something like Grand Theft Auto, something that would appeal to more people here, or a good Call of Duty game instead of what we got.
I forgot about that.
But yeah, I think Monster Hunter would definitely have helped in Japan at least.
I was surprised Killzone Mercenary didn't do better, because that's a hell of a game. It's still a hell of a game.
It's great.
Yeah.
The multiplayer is also awesome.
Yeah. You can still play it, except with bots. It's astonishing. Probably the best handheld FPS I've played, including like to date, to be honest. Even the big ones they ported to the Switch, I didn't like as much. They didn't feel tailored for it. They didn't feel tailored for the touchscreen or anything. But Killzone Mercenary was awesome. But they've sort of just killed Killzone. It's gone. The name has become its grave. It's a shame.
Yeah, that PS4 launch game, not so impressive.
It's awful.
That kind of buried it, I think.
I remember being
still better than Knack.
No, Knack is awesome, Jeremy. Mm-hmm. And in a few years' time, when we do a Knack episode, I'll be here to eulogize it.
As long as you come to bury it, not to praise it. So in addition to the dual analog sticks and the OLED, I feel weird saying OLED, but that's what everyone does. So I guess that's how you say it.
Mm. It is weird, but yeah.
All right. You also had a touch screen and you had the bad part, the rear touch, the back touch. I always think, whenever I think of back touch, I think of my coworker at 1UP at the time, Matt Leone. Every time he mentioned back touch or rear touch, he would make this disgusting gesture with his hands. And it was like he was, you know, touching the back of the PS Vita, but he just made it look so foul and obscene. And he always had this little smirk when he did it because he knew how disgusting it was. And that just put me off of that, like all the way. Just his little like, yeah, little finger thing he did. Oh no, it's gross. Okay, anyway. So this was a bad idea, just not a good feature.
I can't think of a game that utilized, apart from maybe Tearaway, when you tap the back of the screen to bounce your little bloke up in the air. That was good. But that's literally just a stupid kind of gimmick thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of my, if I had to speculate, I would say one of the reasons it didn't do as great as they'd hoped is because there were all these gimmicks that were fed into, like, for example, the sort of flagship Uncharted game, which is actually a pretty good game, uses the gyro controls really well for aiming, but every so often it would be like, Drake's got to get past this curtain. Why didn't you open the curtain by swiping the screen? Like, because, you know, that's fun. That's what you want to do. You want to open a curtain. Not for me.
Yeah. So the back touch, rear touch, whatever it's officially called, on the Vita, if you look at the back looks really nice. It's got this kind of two-tone gloss and matte feature. So like the main part of the body on the back is kind of this gloss. There's like a very subtle pattern to it almost of like black and gray. It looks really cool. Like it's really nice. But then there are these two matte black pads, which sit right where when you hold the system, where your fingertips should be, which, mm-hmm. you know, like if they were grips for your fingers to keep the system from slipping, cool. But no, they are interactive devices. And if you hold the system like a normal human being would, then you are constantly interacting with this back touch feature, which is a touch sensitive pad, similar to what you get on the, you know, the DualSense controller. And it's so bad because those are, They're not in sight. They're out of sight. Yeah. So you have to kind of touch them, like locate them by feel. And once you do that, well, then you've interacted with the system. Whoops, maybe it's going to do something you didn't want. So you have to like, you kind of hold the Vita like you're chopping onions, you know, where you kind of make, you bow your fingers forward to kind of make a knuckle so you don't cut off your fingertips. It's kind of like that. It's like you're chopping scallions as you play video games. And then occasionally you are allowed to extend two fingers and touch the back touch.
Oh, and don't do it.
Fortunately, this is an audio podcast, yeah. So you can't see what I just did.
Yeah, well, I can, and I'll never unsee it.
Now I've just spoiled it for everyone, except, you know. Anyway, so they would just map features to this back touch pad, these back touch pads, and they, a lot of times they didn't work right because, again, it's out of sight, so you're kind of orienting your the position of your fingers on the pads by touch and kind of guessing at where you need to be touching and then guessing at how you need to move your hands and so forth. It wasn't a good idea. And I really wish they had not included it because, you know, on games where you don't use those, it's fine. Like it's effectively null space. It's like pressing at the right controller, the right analog stick on a PS1 game that doesn't have analog support. It's not going to do anything. It doesn't react. It doesn't sense anything. But when a game does have those features, you just have to be really careful about how you hold the system. It's annoying. I hate it. I hate it so much. Okay, that's me ranting.
I mentioned it briefly earlier, but I want to just expand. I mean, as I mentioned, when I would play PS1 games, the first thing I would do is I would go into the settings and turn the rear touch off completely. That's every game individually. I think you have to do that for as well. But in my experience, and this sounds so vague that it's not true, but I swear it is, if I wanted to use the back touch, it would never work. If I didn't want to use the back touch, it would always work. It knew what was the wrong thing to do and always did it. I swear. Throw in all my grenades and oh God, it was the worst. I hated it. I was considering at one point peeling off that mat to see if it would break the rear touch so I would never have to think about it again, but I didn't have the guts to do it, to be honest.
I think one of the worst things about it for me was the for remote play. So like you, Stuart, I was remote playing my PS4 games quite a lot with my Vita, and having the button, the R2L2 mapped to the back touch was such a pain. So I remember playing, it was Last of Us. So playing Last of Us online, the PS4 version, and using that to try and shoot people. And it just did not work well at all. So it was, It really hurt, I think, the remote play sort of functionality of the Vita. And I know Sony were trying to sell it as that kind of accessory to the PS4 for remote play. And I think they really made a mistake putting the back touch in there instead of putting a second shoulder buttons, R2, L2 buttons.
It really surprises me that they didn't do that, considering how everything else kind of stepped up from the PSP. And that was all that was really missing, was those extra shoulder buttons. But then again, I don't really know design, but maybe that would have made the whole unit just like vastly more expensive. I have no idea.
Can't imagine that two physical buttons cost less than two capacitive touchpads.
I have, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they just had tons of those touchpads knocking about and they had to get rid of them.
You know, this was the era, I guess maybe Sony's still in it a little bit, but kind of the thick of Sony's like, hey, Nintendo's Wii and DS really kind of ate our lunch. So we need to do what they're doing, but worse. So you had Move, you had the six axis controller and, you know, poor Lair RIP.
Oh, dear.
You had them doing these kind of goofy things that didn't really help that much. The DualSense touchpad on PS4, and I would say this was really the worst of it. Like dual axis or six axis, you know, that was fine. Motion controller, like they eventually got gyroscope controls right by the time PS4 came around, and you could, like, at the very least, you could use the control pad, like tilt it to input text really quickly. Well, that was a great innovation. But touchpad, there was just nothing good about it. Really, really a black mark on the Vita's name.
Yeah, and games stopped using it so quickly. It's outside that first year, I mean, there was, I think, Sir Eats-a-Lot. Not sure if you played that. It's an indie game. It came out probably 2017. That kind of... the devs kind of famously talk that, we're using the back touch. It was the first game in like 6 years that used the back touch, but it was such a gimmick that you kind of wish companies like Sony or, you know, even Nintendo with the 3DS, they would realize that, okay, these things are not going to be used by majority of games. Let's just make the device, make it something that's actually just functional and does what it's supposed to do. And that's why the Switch works. It didn't have all of those gimmicks that, that the Vita had. I mean, the Joy-Cons you could argue were a bit of a gimmick, but, including the back touch was just a bit of a waste when they could have just put 16 gigs of storage. I'm going to keep going on about that. They should have put storage on the Vita.
I agree. So Sandeep, you mentioned remote play. That's not really a hardware feature exactly. It's kind of like them saying, oh, Mr. Kojima, what a great idea you have with transferring. Let's give it a less stupid name. Could you tell us a little bit about remote play? Because I tried it once. I went on vacation back when Final Fantasy XII HD first came to PS4 and was like, hell yes, I'm going to play Final Fantasy XII on vacation. And I did not. I could not get it to connect for more than like 30 seconds at a time. It was a bad
experience. I think it definitely worked better when you were near the Vita. I mean, I had a lot of success in my house. So the PS4 is in my loft, and I normally would play in bed, kind of the next floor down. But it ran really well for me. And you could connect it either directly to the Vita or through Wi-Fi. So when you tried to play when you were abroad, you were playing it through Wi-Fi. And so it was possible, but very hit or miss. But I found connecting it directly to the PS4, it was great. But I know that's one of these kind of niche things that I wanted, where I could play the PS4 in bed, that I think a lot of people would have just said, well, I may as well just play the PS4 sitting in front of a TV. So it probably wasn't a huge selling point for most people, but I absolutely love that feature. And I bought my PS4 because I knew I could play those games on my Vita. So I'm probably one of those weird people in that scenario.
I think all of us, just by merit of owning Vitas and liking Vita, are weird people. So it's fine. You're among friends.
Great.
Stuart, I think you said you'd had good success with a remote play.
Only when I only tried it a few times. I thought you had to be close to the system to use it. I didn't realize you could actually cloud play it, so to speak.
In theory, in practice, no.
No. But I mean, again, it's just something that the industry has kind of expanded on. They went from that. Then you had the Wii U, which was kind of similar in that you had the Wii remote thing, screen. I forgot what it's called because I never use it and it sucks. The gamepad, that's it. And that was something you could take about 30 centimeters away from the console and use. And then, of course, the Switch is just the final evolution of that, which is just whatever. It's the same thing. Just take the whole console around with you. We don't care. But I don't know. The PlayStation Now, I guess, is the current take on that. But they haven't got a handheld to use it with anymore. So mistake.
I think if the phones are essentially Sony's new handheld.
Yeah.
I've been remote playing my PS5 on my phone, and again, it works really well. And you know, I think, I assume, or kind of hope as well, that when they do introduce that kind of retro library with the PS Plus / PS Now, that'll be on the phones, because I think that would be pretty cool to be able to have access to all of those. Obviously, it's not ideal that it's all cloud streaming, but I think that's probably the way they see it. It's not worth them putting out a new handheld dedicated. They'll just use people's existing devices.
There should be a PlayStation Now app for Nintendo Switch. That would be,
that would be ideal.
Cool. Yeah,
that would be cool. Yeah.
Seems like a great business move. I hope Sony does it. Jump on it, Sony. Free advice. I mean, there have been rumors that, you know, the Microsoft Nintendo friendship is going to extend to the point where you can play, you know, like games with gold or something by cloud or something.
Game Pass on the Switch. Yeah.
Right. They call it Game Pass now, not games with gold. That's how old I am.
But you can still get games with gold, so it's okay. It's still relevant.
Oh, I see. So there's just so many things.
This month, Lego Batman 2.
Well, there you go. So definitely the way you should not play remote play on Vita is by making use of the very short-lived 3G option. I think a lot of people forget about this. But Vita was cellular capable, at least optionally. There were two models at launch.
God, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the kind of person who goes all in on handheld games. I'm like, give me the biggest, best, you know, just most elaborate option. But even I looked at 3D and said, would I use this? Do I really want to pay an extra $20 or whatever it is every month to what do I even do? You know, they tried to use, what was it, Home or Near? Near, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Not to be mistaken for Near. It's Near, like near far, as opposed to...
Was that like their version of Street Pass, except nobody ever used it?
Yes, except it was confusing and bad.
Mm, okay.
Sometimes I would see people that I knew, but then I didn't know why.
I was one of those few people that bought the 3G Vitas. I didn't need it. I wish I had thought to myself, do I really need to have this? But I think I got kind of a little bit suckered in by Sony's marketing about, you know, always social gaming. And I used it a few times. I had like £5 on my pay-as-you-go SIM card. And so I used it a few times, kind of just clicked on Near or kind of updated my score on MotorStorm RC while I was out and about. But yeah, it was very unnecessary. I think, you know, they were trying something different, which is not always a bad thing, but it's just not, it was not necessary for the games. And it again came off as one of these gimmicks that no one used beyond that kind of first few months of the device being out.
Well, it wasn't something that developers could count on. They couldn't really integrate that functionality into their games because at launch, Sony offered two models and one of them didn't have that feature. So yeah, it really hindered what you could do. Like, you know, if something like Pokemon Go had existed, you know, for the PlayStation Vita, they couldn't have really gone all in on that because it would be great for the people who had a 3G Vita and then everyone else would be out in the cold. So
it would have been Invisimals Go and it would have been very unsuccessful indeed.
Let's see, what are some other notable hardware features? Well, I guess we've kind of touched on everything. Games shipped on cartridges, little tiny cartridges, and their spirit lives on with Nintendo Switch. But Nintendo will not let you manufacture Vita carts. So again, Vita cart manufacturing is gone. We asked Nintendo, like, will you guys please let us publish some Vita games? And they blocked us for a month. It was terrible. I'm making all that up. I hope I don't get in trouble at work for this. There's also the memory cards, which are very expensive, even though they're basically just SD cards. And you have the backward compatibility, which, again, we've praised to high heavens because it is awesome. Yeah. And being able to just revisit these games and play them even better than they were on PSP originally was really great. Like, it was a genuine upgrade. Maybe the best form of backward compatibility I've ever really experienced, honestly. Just like the built-in feature set. The Vita had exactly twice the pixel resolution on each axis of the PSP. So all the games scaled up very cleanly. There was no artifacting or anything. It was just like, you know, now your pixels are 4 pixels instead of 1. But, you know, so it looked about the same because the density of the Vita screen was much higher. It was closer to the, you know, the Apple Retina screens that were debuting around the same time. And, you know, PS1 games weren't an even resolution, but you had the option to like scale or stretch those, or you could just, you know, do like, I think 3X scaling or 4X scaling, and they look great too. And, you know, just playing all these classic games and, you know, last generation games on Vita was a huge selling point. And there, you know, some of the games had to be sideloaded through PS3, but that was a limitation of PSP to begin with. I got a lot of mileage out of PSP games, revisiting like Capcom's collections and things like that.
Yeah.
Just when that came out, it was, you know, there were still PSP games actually shipping, when the Vita was kind of early on. So there were a few games I think I reviewed for PSP on Vita, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm making that up. I don't know.
And you're right. And I know we touched on it before, but not only did they look great, they played better. So games like Peace Walker, when you map it to the second analog stick, and you know, Third Birthday, Portable Ops, there are so many games that that played well on the PSP, but you had to, like you said, use the claw to try and, like, you know, I remember having that one kind of finger had to like mess around the D-pad to do the camera of Portable Ops. Whereas now you could play these games properly with the dual analog stick. It just made the games better than they were on the original systems, which was great.
Yeah, I mean, with respect to the PSP, which I do love, playing something like God of War, Ghost of Sparta on the Vita, and then going back and picking up the PSP and using the nub, I'd just be like, I don't know how I ever tolerated this thing, because this, my thumb is slipping off of it constantly. It doesn't function. I don't know why they did this. But no, the Vita was fantastic for that. I think it's a shame that more than almost any other system I can think of, it's hamstrung by bizarre incompatibilities. Like you mentioned, Jeremy, that some games could only be put on the Vita by downloading them from a PS3, as opposed to just straight onto the system. I don't understand what the actual thing stopping that actually was. I know over here there were games that we could download, like initially the Spyro games that you couldn't download in America for some reason. It was just all over the place. I don't know what they were thinking. There was the PSTV as well, and that had the same problem. There were several games that just weren't compatible with it. And unless you hacked it, in which case all the games become compatible with it, and you can make the decision yourself whether or not it works and makes sense.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, games that revolved around the rear touch feature, like, they could use the PS4's touchpad, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So it was a little awkward, but still, like, I would say a better experience, honestly, to play on PSTV.
You can use the, I want to get it right, the right analog stick on the PS4 controller and click it to then use the back touch as well. So, but it was fiddly. They made it really fiddly. And I guess they just didn't really think about it enough. But like you said, Stuart, doing the whitelist hack, it meant that you could choose. You can play anything you want. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But at least you can do it yourself and make
I think
choice.
Clicking the right stick to do the back touch is like just objectively better like than using the actual back touch with your horrible mandible hands. Like, that's just that makes me want to buy a PSTV. You know, I never thought about buying one before, and now I'm like, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like the only PS Vita game I would have played that wouldn't work on PSTV would have been an Uncharted, which made use of the camera from time to time, where you had to like hold it to a light source to like read through paper or something. Very gimmicky and very fiddly, even on even in the game itself, like on Vita. But yeah, I don't see how you would replicate that on PSTV. But otherwise, yeah, it was the PSTV was an interesting little, I wouldn't say experiment. I think it was kind of a sort of a desperate attempt to say, well, we've got all these PS Vita innards. And no one's buying the system. So what if we sell it as a little mini console? And I bought one and I think it's great. I've done a lot of video capture off of it. I've streamed from it. It's a great way to get PS1 games and PSP games on a television also.
I think I'm going to have to get one. That does sound
but unfortunately, they're very expensive now.
Done.
Like, they were being cleared out for, you know, $20 for a while, and then all of a sudden they dried up and everyone said, well, we need one of these, and now they're like $200 instead of $20. So they're probably even more these days, what with the retro gaming boom.
If any listeners have one and they don't want it, DM me, because you know, I'll take it off your hands.
He's very noble that way.
Yeah,
save you the clutter. Those things are huge. They take up so much space.
I think it was one of these devices where it just kind of showed how close Sony was to the Switch almost, where you had the Vita, you had the PSTV, you could play Vita games on a TV. It's like if they had made a dock instead of the PSTV, they would have been there. They would have had that kind of that concept. They were so close to it. But I really like my PSTV. I feel like it was, again, similar to the Vita, a Sony just kind of sent it out to die. I think, like you said, they had lots of spare parts. They thought, let's just try something. But they had this cool little device. It was cheap. It could play Vita, PSP, PS1 games. If they had invested a bit more in it and tried to make sure it had Netflix and, you know, all the video streaming services, it could have been like that little set-top box, like that, you know, like the Fire Stick. Yep, but I feel like they just kind of went out there and they just ignored it completely.
You know, I think, you know, the Vita had a lot of great features, a lot of great games, a ton of great games. There were definitely people at Sony who really stood behind it and loved it and really pushed for it. But there were a lot of decisions being made by people who just didn't quite get it or weren't quite sure what they were doing. Which brings us to, like, I can't do a PS Vita podcast without talking about the Vita boat, because that is one of the most harrowing experiences of my the 15 years I spent as a games journalist. Also, Bob wasn't here, but he wanted to mention the fact that his strongest memory of PS Vita is standing in line for 90 minutes to play it for like 2 minutes at E3 2011. The Vita boat was kind of similar. It was, I think it was maybe, it was either Tokyo Game Show 2010 or 2011, but it was, you know, before anyone had really seen or used Vita before. And it was very enticing. It sounded very promising. And on the first day of Tokyo Game Show, Sony was like, hey, invite only, press, reporters, come to this event. We're going to let you spend some quality time with the Vita. So, probably like 50 people from the games press, the international press, US and Europe, went to this place pretty far from Tokyo Game Show, which is out in Chiba. We went into Tokyo itself, to Shinagawa Seaside or something like that. It's a pretty long trip. This is the time where the first day of the show has just finished and we all need to be sitting in our hotel rooms writing about the games we saw. But the prospect of writing about Vita and having hands-on experiences, you know, off the show floor in private was just too much to pass up on. So we go to this place and they take us on a bus. We're like, what the hell's going on? And the bus stops and they're like, get on this boat. So they get on this, they put us on this boat. It's like a very kind of low slung wooden boat, maybe like 50 meters long. And inside it's just one long room and there's two tables, like running the length of the boat on either side. They're like, hey, it's time for dinner. We're like, okay. So we sit down and they serve us this very nice, damn it, I keep forgetting the name of what it's called. I don't know. It's like the very formal course by course meal where it's like two boiled fish, a tiny little fish. Here is like a small serving of seaweed, you know, that kind of thing. And we're like, okay, this is nice, but where are the Vitas? We look around, there are no kiosks or anything. It's just a room with women in kimonos serving us food slowly. And that lasted for like 2 hours. And the entire time, people were miserable. Like, I was like, I am sitting at this table, so I can't bring out my computer really and type. So I can't do any of the work that I need to. The people sitting across from me were all from AOL properties. So they were forbidden from eating any food at a press event. So there were three dudes across from me who were on their computers because they were angrily not able to eat while they were being served food and trapped on this boat. You know, this thing is pulled away from shore. So we're out in the middle of, you know, the bay and we're being served food. There were people who were getting up and going to the bathroom because we were on the water and they're trying to eat and got seasick. So anyway, after several hours, they finally, like, there's some people who are circulating around the room and have PSPs or PS Vitas. And so we all try to like jockey for a position to see games. And I spent 30 seconds with the game with like shapes and sounds and stuff. What was that called?
Sound Shapes. Sound Shapes.
That's it. Sound Shapes, not Shape Sounds. Sound Shapes. Yes. I spent 30 seconds with that game. And then it was probably another half hour before they finally let us off the boat. It was dark. It was probably like 9 p.m. We were a long way away from any train stations. And I am normally a pretty polite person. But in this case, the first taxi cab that I saw, I flagged down and was like, screw all you guys. You can find your own taxi cab. I'm going back to my hotel. But the thing is, it took us like 15 minutes to find a cab. Like, this is not central Tokyo. It's like the sticks. Anyway, that was how Sony presented Vita to the press for the first time. And the entire time we were in there, Sony PR, there were some Sony PR people who were like, wow, isn't this great? Isn't this just the coolest experience? Don't you love this? We're like, no, this is hell. We are trapped in hell. We have jobs to do. this is not where we need to be. We've come to this and spent hours. And yes, thank you for the food, but not all of us could eat it. And some of us threw it up. We just want to go do our jobs. I can't write about 30 seconds of sound shapes. Anyway, I still like the system, though, despite that introduction. It was a rough relationship.
But you can't ever play sound shapes because it induces unfortunate side effects.
Yes, fish spewing everywhere.
Yeah. I like the idea of the Vita boat. It makes me think about other systems that may have an associated form of transport that causes trauma. But I guess I'll get into it later, maybe. I don't know.
The Dreamcast would have been like that incinerator ride in Toy Story 3.
Yeah. Yeah. The Microsoft Kinect blimp.
It would be a Zeppelin.
Desperately flailing your arms, trying to get it not to crash into the tower.
Yeah, what do you call those things with the hydrogen? Zeppelin, dirigible? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. One of those things. I always think of blimp and a Zeppelin as the same thing. I'm not really up on my aircraft in that respect, I suppose.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now that I've ranted at length about the Vita boat, let's talk about the games. There were actually a lot of games, and some of them were very, very cool. For a little while, Sony was really putting its resources into making great games. And I would say at the top of the list, Stuart, you shouted out Killzone Mercenary, I believe.
Yeah, it's difficult to describe how impressive it is. You've just got to play out. If you like popular FPSs, if you like that kind of first-person shooter, it's such an accomplished one. It's so much fun. It feels as snappy as, say, like Black Ops or something, like actual proper Black Ops, not Vita Black Ops. That's not the best comparison, maybe. But it's still good to this day. And if they up-resed it and put it out on PS4 or PS5, it would still be a good game. It's the fact that you can still buy, even if the online is dead, you can still play against bots, and it's a lot of fun. I think, and that was a launch title. It wasn't a launch title. Okay. It was an early title.
2013.
Oh, wow. I'm actually surprised. But in my opinion, that's probably the best Vita game as a big seller kind of thing. That was probably the best hope that they had, unfortunately. But when I think about the Vita, I mostly think about Japanese games anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think at launch they really put a lot of eggs into the Uncharted basket. I will, maybe this just makes me a heretic, but that's the only Uncharted game I've ever played all the way through. And I kept waiting for it to get good. It looked nice, but it was always just like, here's Drake scuttling across the walls. Here's Drake shooting down 20 of the same guy. Here's Drake solving a back touch puzzle or pointing the camera at a light source clumsily. I don't know, it just didn't do much for me.
I feel like if they had dropped the gimmicks, and I mentioned earlier, because the shooting was so good with the gyro, you could fine aim really nicely. If they just focused on that, it would have been a much better game. I still don't hate it. I don't think it's bad necessarily, but it really could have done without all that gimmickry, because it just makes the game look cheap and it makes it look kind of lame, which is not what they wanted for a launch game, really.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed it personally, but the camera needing a light source moments in the game were just the worst. I remember being on a train and then it said, oh, point your Vita at a light source. And it's like, oh, come on, I'm on a train.
It's like playing Boktai or something.
Excuse me, sir, could you shine your iPhone's flashlight at me?
It was still early. I didn't remember my iPhone having a torch. I would have used that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
I remember kind of, I think when the train emptied out a little bit, I stood up and put it to the light of the train and it worked. So that's what I had to do. But that was silly of them. They should never have done that.
As long as it's not the sun, like Boktai, where it's like, you know, go out in the sun now. And I'm like, I live in England. It's not going to happen.
I think Uncharted was the game they wanted to be a huge success. But the real, you know, kind of proof of concept for Vita to me was Gravity Rush, which we've already had an episode about and have talked about in extensive detail. But what a great game. Just very inventive, very stylish. And, you know, it takes a little while to get used to the control mechanics, but once you get a handle on it, it just feels so good to fly across the screen and have this kind of open world on a handheld system where you're just like launching yourself into the oblivion, or, you know, into the void, and, you know, coming to a stop, hanging around, pointing yourself in a different direction, moving around that way, fighting enemies in zero gravity. Very, very cool. Like, you know, that was definitely one of Sony's more inventive and imaginative works of this era.
It was. I really enjoyed Gravity Rush. And, you know, as you progressed in the game, seeing your powers grow and being able to fly from one of the cities to the other one in one go, which you couldn't do at the beginning, it's just, I think there was just so much to it. And it's a real shame that Gravity Rush 2 didn't come to Vita. I think it apparently on the PS4, oh no, I mean, not apparently, but on the PS4, I think it sold really badly in Japan. And you got to imagine, given the audience was on the Vita, it probably would have done a lot better on the Vita. But obviously, it'd be more complicated to try and create two versions of the game for Vita and PS4. But just a shame that we didn't get the sequel there.
I think I'm going to have to reinstall that because I could never get into it, and everyone kept praising it. I think it did something early on that put me off, and I won't get into it because all the people will get mad at me in the comments.
You're scared of the internet now. It's a shame.
Well, I think
you're a true games journalist.
Like, I think the main characters had a cutscene quite early on where like her towel fell off or something, and she went, "Yeah," and I was like, "Oh, come on! I thought you were good anime, not this."
There's not a whole lot of that though. Like,
no, but
I think there is that kind of early scene, and it kind of sets your expectations, and then it doesn't really go there again. So
okay,
I don't know.
That's good to know. Please don't get mad at me, internet. I love you. You've done so much for me, and yeah.
But you know, there were lots of Hyperdimension Neptunia games for Vita, so you know, you can get your fill of that sort of thing there.
I'll pass. Thank you very much. I'm good.
And another great game, kind of at the bookend of Sony's development, I mentioned it earlier, is Freedom Wars. I don't actually remember a lot about that game because I was reviewing it right at the time there was a huge medical emergency in my family. So like it was all just kind of a blur for me, but I remember really liking it and finding its setting very like bleak and interesting. This kind of dystopian panopticon world where you're in prison fighting to reduce your sentence by like fighting kind of monster hunter-ish creatures, just kind of brought together a lot of interesting elements and just felt like, wow, they really gave a crap about this one and they put some effort into it.
They did, definitely. And I'm not sure if you've heard the news, but these servers are closing down on December 24th for online on Freedom Wars. So
that's okay. I don't like playing with other people anyway.
Okay, fair enough. Well, if you want to get if you cared about getting the platinum, it's pretty much impossible to get alone just because there's such a grind to get 500,000 years on your sentence. But fortunately, I've managed to get there. I'm now 2,000 years away. I'll have the platinum on the Vita's birthday. I'm going to be doing a stream on that day. So I'm going to get the platinum finally after 8 years of playing that game.
Congratulations on that.
Then you'll be free from Freedom Wars. And you can spiral the disc into a bin and never think about it again.
Another really notable game, in my opinion, that came out on Vita originally and now has been ported to many other things, well, a few other things, is Sheeran the Wanderer 5, the Tower of Fortune and the Dice of Fate. Did I get that mixed up? I don't know. I worked on the physical release of this game for a limited run, like planned out all the content for the CE, and I still can't get the title right. It's just Sheeran 5. It's so good. It's such a great roguelike. Maybe the best entry of the Sheeran series, which is by far the best of the console specific roguelike franchises. So really just like there's so much to do in that game and so much depth to it.
I did like that one quite a lot. That was one of the last Vita games that I bought, I think, before I hacked it. But it was worth it. It was great.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one. It was the first Sheeran game I played, first of these sort of wanderer roguelikes I've played. And the first 2 hours were so difficult to get into. I really didn't understand what was going on, but once it clicked, it was just awesome. Really, really enjoyed that game.
Also of interest to me and me alone, one of the last notable original releases, like exclusives initially for Vita, was Saga Scarlet Grace by Square Enix. Now that's on everything, but it started out on Vita and really, I think, was beautifully designed for a portable system, the way it just kind of skips the overworld and, you know, it has all these arcane systems that it doesn't tell you about. So if you don't play it the right way, then you're boned. But, you know, that's just kind of what you get into with Saga games. I was lucky enough to help localize that. It's like the one game I've ever localized. And so it has a fond place in my heart. But, you know, even without that, it's a great, I think it's a really great Saga game because it actually does explain a lot of the battle system to you and makes kind of like what's going to happen actually sort of self-evident, which is not something Saga always does. So a great starting point for the Saga series. Just definitely be sure to start with the character Erpina. Her story is the easiest to deal with. Do not do like I did by mistake and start with Leonard, because his is the most open and kind of unstructured, and you will have no idea what you're doing after a few hours.
I was a big fan of that game as well. I didn't play it on the Vita. I imported it from Japan, but never really gave it much of a shot, but I played it on Switch and just loved it.
Another game that's on Switch now as of very recently, but I want to shout out and technically didn't start on the PS Vita, but I think it first came out as a Vita game, is the Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc. The first one was originally a Japanese PSP game. I don't think that the PSP version hit the US, but it came to the Vita in a double pack, I think, with its sequel, which is Danganronpa 2 Goodbye Despair. And then later you got V3, Danganronpa V3 and Ultra Despair Girls, but we don't talk about that last one because it's garbage. But Danganronpa, if you haven't played it, is a horrible, mean-spirited, twisted visual novel slash detective game. And you can't say much about it without spoiling it, but I'm a huge fan of that series. I absolutely love it. If you can put aside some really quite iffy stuff that happens in the games, then you'll have a great time with the sheer grindhousey video nasty horror of it. Really, it's very funny, lots of very compelling characters, and the actual trial gameplay can be very exhilarating when you manage to, the way it's done is you've got what's called truth bullets. I think Danganronpa means truth bullet. I might be wrong. But you'll have, say Phoenix Wright, when you present a piece of evidence, instead of that, you'd have a bullet that says like whatever the evidence is or whatever the contradiction is. You'll fire it at the debate text as it's scrolling across the screen. And if you're right, you'll smash it into pieces and you'll interrupt and contradict the point. It's much better than I'm making it sound, but I'm a big fan of those games. Except again, Ultra Despair Girls, which is a third-person shooter set in the universe, is hideous. Don't ever play it, even by accident. As a joke, don't play it. It sucks. It's horrible. It'll make you feel bad, and then you go to prison when you play it. You've done a crime, so don't play.
Wow. I played a demo of it at E3 or TGS once and was like, oh, that seems kind of cool. And then never actually... I mean, it was like the first 10 minutes of it, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's something there that I didn't see in that 10 minutes.
Well, if there's ever a Danganronpa episode of Retronauts, which I pray there will be.
I'm sure that seems like a thing Bob will want to do at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're kind of running low on time, so there's actually a ton, just a huge amount of really interesting, pretty major games on Vita. I put mm-hmm. together a list of several dozen, and very few of these were games that started on other systems. They actually started on Vita. It's really remarkable how much was there, but we can't go through with all of them. So maybe we could each talk about two more games apiece and call it a day. So Sandeep is our guest. Please, why don't you start? Like, they don't have to be games from this list. This list was just kind of, you know, me pulling from the extensive list of 1300 games and saying, oh yeah, that was interesting, that was good, that was notable, that was bad but notable.
It's a great list you put there, but I think I'll touch on Ys 8, which I was not much of a Ys player before Ys Origin. I really enjoyed that. And then I gave Ys 8 a chance. And that game is just amazing. You know, when we think of, like you said, how developers managed to get more out of the PSP over its lifetime, Ease 8 just looked amazing. It played amazing. The soundtrack was great. It felt like kind of a real sort of console game on a handheld. I really, really love that game. It's just one of my favorites on the system, and just kind of showcased how powerful and how capable the Vita really is.
Is that Memories of Salsetta, or is that a different one?
No, that is a remake of Ease 3.
Ease 4. Yeah.
Which one is Ease 8? What's the subtitle? Do we
Lacrimosa have a subtitle?
Oh, yeah, of course. How can I forget Lacrimosa of Dana? That sensible sentence. Of course.
Just trips off the tongue, really. Dana, oh, Dana, you and your Lacrimosa.
Oh, we'll be doing going round.
Oh, no, Sandy, what's the one other like game that you really think is worth saying? Ah, hell yeah.
Soul Sacrifice, I think. Similar to Freedom Wars in terms of being Sony wanting to create a Monster Hunter type game. Really cool setting and really kind of bleak and dark sort of fairy tale themes to it. But it was a really good game. I really enjoyed it. Great to play online with people as well. Really tough at the end, but excellent game. Definitely worth playing.
Was that the one Keiji Inafune was in charge of?
That's one with the book. The book they had Soul Sacrifice Delta was like the upgrade of it. Yeah, that was a cool game.
Yeah.
All right, Stuart, what about you?
I guess I'd give it to TXK, although I don't think you can still buy it, unfortunately. So, I mean, definitely don't hack it. Obviously, that would be illegal. Yeah. But
no, llamas have been bad, and hacking llamas is even worse.
Yeah, TXK is, I'm not going to mince words. It's just another version of Tempest by Jeff Minter, but it's a brilliant version of Tempest by Jeff Minter. The closest is the current Tempest 4000, but I think TXK is even more, despite being older, is even more refined. And it's just a brilliant, absorbing handheld title that I really can't get enough of. And I recommend, if you can legally buy it, doing so. And if you can't legally buy it, then you have no choice but to download it. And, you know, don't tell anyone I told you that.
Oh, it's still there. I just checked.
Oh, it is. Okay, brilliant. Because I know it went down for a bit, but I'm thrilled that it's still available. So definitely buy it. It's an excellent game and you won't regret it. Okay. The other game I want to mention, this is
Super Frog HD.
Yeah, well, it's going to have to be now because I forgot what I was going to say. I'm going to mention Super Frog HD. Yeah. Super Frog HD is a remake of an Amiga platform game called Super Frog, where you tool around various worlds collecting inordinate amounts of fruit that does nothing and coins. In the original game, you have to collect a certain number of coins before you could leave. In the remake, they took that out and made it much more traditional of a platformer. It's the kind of platformer where you'll run into walls, the walls will disappear and open up into huge hidden underground caverns. It's the kind of thing that just makes my hair stand on end, to be honest. The entire original Super Frog has also been remade and included in the game because the main levels are new. They're brand new levels that feel like they could have come straight out of the original. You win them on a slot machine that's entirely not luck-based. It's like the easiest thing to win in the world. Unlike the original game, which had a fairly traditional slot machine, it was almost impossible to win. And it's the only way to get this handheld, I think, because I don't think it ever hit the Switch. The only thing I'd say that's bad about it is it has some not great flash tweeny looking animation in, but if you want a platform game, you can just pick up and play without having to think too hard about anything. It's just run, jump, and float, and glide, and find fruit, and dodge little hedgehogs with big googly eyes. This is what you want, Super Frog HD. I think it comes with a level editor, even. I might be mistaken on that one. It definitely did on the PlayStation, but I don't know about the Vita version. But yeah, that's like 64 levels right there of Amiga-style platforming with a fantastic soundtrack. So yeah, I recommend it very highly.
Cool. I never actually played it, but I think I'm going to grab it right now.
It's a kind of game that looks like shovelware. And, you know, there's a compelling argument to some that it is, but not to me. You'll never tell me that game is bad because I won't have it.
Oh, I think it may not be in the store anymore, actually.
This is a disaster. Team 17, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's not there.
This is the worst day of my life.
Well, you have it already, Stuart, so you're okay.
Yeah, I do, but what is it worth if I can't share the wonder of Super Frog with the world?
Well, now you can be the Super Frog influencer.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You can do like me and talk about how, oh, this game was so good. Can't believe it can't be played by anyone. Really devote yourself to that, and then it'll come back out somehow.
Stay tuned for Retronauts Team 17 games that only I like coming soon.
All right. And finally, I do want to give a mention to, there's so many good games here. I want to call it the Metal Gear Solid HD Collection, which was not exclusive for Vita, but the fact that they took, you know, a PS1, no, it was just the PS2 games, right?
PS2
games, yeah, it was 2 and 3 and Peace Walker.
And Peace Walker, yeah. And brought those in to the Vita and really without compromises, and in some cases made them better, was really like just astonishing. Like I was really impressed with that collection. It was in my system as like the cartridge game that was always filling the slot for several years. I would just, you know, pick it up and rarely ever actually sit down and play it seriously, but I liked having it there. Just knowing at any time I can hang out with Snake in the Jungle in the '60s. Lucky me. And finally, I feel like I am obligated to mention Breach and Clear, which was the game that kind of gave Limited Run its start, but not because of that, but because I think it really speaks to the devotion of the Vita audience, because the game didn't sell anything, you know, in digital release form. But then once it was put into a cartridge, it sold like 5,000 copies immediately. That just like sold out in an hour. And really, you know, I think it spoke to, yes, the kind of compulsive nature of collectors, if you want to be negative about it. But the fact that, you know, like this Vita game suddenly became available in a format that people could actually own, as opposed to just like, oh, it's another digital release, who cares? I don't know. Like it spoke to those people. And I feel like so many games on Vita were surprise successes as a result of the enthusiasm and the love of the Vita community. And I think that's, you know, someone mentioned Dreamcast earlier, and I really think that these two systems do share a lot in common.
Yeah.
In that they had very short lives, at least as far as the, you know, kind of first party development was concerned, and ultimately didn't sell that many units, but, you know, they sustained this fandom and this enthusiasm for so long. And, you know, the Vita catalog runs all the way, you know, like with regular consistent releases in digital form into 2019. So that's 8 years for a system that only had first party support really for 3 years. That's really astonishing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Sony tapped into something here, and I wish we could look into the alternate universe where, instead of saying, well, we've got PS4, we could just focus on that, where they said, you know, there's something here. Let's really find it. And taken the Vita to its ultimate extent, like what could that have been like? I mean, the answer is probably something similar to what Nintendo has with Switch, but they would have had to put the amount of effort into it that Nintendo did with Switch. And, you know, that just didn't happen. But with that kind of enthusiasm and that care and that just, you know, concentration of marketing and effort and budgets, who knows what could have happened? So Vita will always be the kind of like could have been in my books. And I would love to see Sony get back into the portable game, because I feel like their portable systems were really strong and unique and had great libraries. And there's just something that you don't get with a mobile game, you know, a phone game, that these systems offered. And, you know, I'm saying, Sony, come back. We want you. Speaking as someone who loves portable gaming, we want you to come back. We want you to give us more of this stuff. And this time, make good on it. Don't just bail after the first sign of trouble. Like, make it happen. You've done such great things with PS4 and 5. Like, you can do the same thing with Vita 2 or whatever you want to call it. Switch, the non-Switch.
Definitely don't call it the Vita 2. That's so weird. Don't call it that.
I think one thing about the Vita as well that makes it really great for portable gaming is the size. I know we didn't mention it when we talked about the features of it, but, you know, the Switch to me always feels a little bit too big. I can't put it in my pocket, but the Vita was just great. I'll put it in my, you know, blazer pocket when I go to work, and it's just so easy to take out and about. And I think that's kind of a underrated feature of kind of handhelds that kind of work pre-Switch.
Yeah. I got a lot more use out of Switch once the Lite came out. And if we could have gotten an OLED Lite Switch, that would have been...
Yeah, I suspect it's coming in the future at some point.
Probably. Yeah. There's still a couple more years of iterations and, hey, buy this thing again.
I mean, my Switch has a Satisfy grip on it, so it's like even bigger than it should have been. It's ridiculously bulky. but if I don't have it, then my hands hurt.
Aw.
Thank you.
Well, you know, there's always Steam Deck to make it look smaller.
Oh God, I forgot about that. I pre-ordered that and I forgot about it. Let's put the D-pad in the very top right of the system, like right on the very top right of the on the top left even of the bezel. Very sensible stuff. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. I'm going to get it.
Definitely made by people who have played a lot of console games.
I'm going to get it, hold it in my hands, and be like, my whole Steam library is at my disposal. What should I play first? And I'm going to boot up Super Frog. I know it. It's going to happen.
You should stream that. Anyway, that's it for this episode of Retronauts. Thank you, Stuart, and especially Sandeep for joining us. We'll take our bows here. So to close, let me just tell you that Retronauts is so good that you should support us to help fund the show and make it happen. That is how we are funded, through your funding. You can go to patreon.com/retronauts and subscribe to the show, and you'll get every episode a week early with no advertisements and a strong, clear, crisp audio quality, much better than you get on the free feed. That's $3 a month. For $5 a month, you get all that. Plus, you get 2 episodes a month that are patron exclusives on alternating Fridays. You also get a column and mini podcast by Diamond Fight every single weekend, except when they're on vacation, which, you know, that's allowed. We allow it. Also, you get Discord access. So it's a veritable buffet of Retronauts stuff for $5 a month. And it helps me keep the lights on and record podcasts and stuff. So that's great. Anyway, that's my pitch for this show. Sandeep, where can we find you and your projects?
So I'm on YouTube, Too Old for Gaming, with numbers 2 and 4. You'll be able to see all my videos. I've got way more than 100 Vita review videos there. So if you're interested in learning more about great Vita games, then take a look at my channel and you'll find lots of recommendations there.
And Stuart?
If you go to my Twitter feed at Stupacabra, you can find a link there that will take you to all my stuff. That's I write stuff for Retronauts. I record stuff for Retronauts. I'm one of the other presenters on Retronauts. We've got a fun episode. Actually, I was about to say coming soon, but I don't know what this is coming out in, so I won't say anything about it. We've got good. Let's just say there's going to be some excellent episodes coming up, as per always. Other than that, I write stuff for Nintendo Life and Push Square, and I do a comic called Mary Hell, and you can find that on maryhellcomic.com.
Oh, it looks like your episode that you're obliquely referring to is coming out in like 10 days.
Oh, wow.
So we can look forward to it.
Yes, it's going to be raucous.
Uh-oh, raucous. That sounds dangerous. All right. Finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, on Twitter as GameSpite, on YouTube as Jeremy Parrish. And of course, as mentioned a few times in this episode, helping to publish games at limitedrungames.com, although no Vita games anymore. Sorry, we tried. We would love to, but it's just not in the cards. Literally, it's not in the cards because they don't anymore. Thanks, everyone. Good night.